Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to a very special Veterans Day edition of Secure Freedom Radio. We have been privileged to have become a tradition for such occasions, a protracted full hour visit with one of the most admired and decorated veterans of our country. He is Lieutenant General William Jerry Boykin, United States Army retired. A man who has distinguished himself in uniform, in a career much spent in the special forces, in fact, the most elite elements of the special forces, including Delta Force, both as one of its founding members and as its commander, and in numerous other command positions and if there was a scrap over the past 30 or 40 years, it's a fair bet that Jerry Boykin was in the middle of it, doing distinguished duty. General Boykin, I mean this with the most sincere sentiment. It is a true pleasure to have you with us, and I appreciate you taking a full hour to visit about things we all should be thinking about this Veterans Day. Welcome back, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Frank. I always enjoy doing your program because you're doing great work and serving a great cause with this program.
Thank you. Well, it's mostly because of the quality of people like yourself who participate in it. General Boykin, I'd like to start on this Veterans Day with a sort of appreciation of what it means to serve in uniform. Veterans, of course, are people who have, in many cases, sacrificed tremendously. Those who will be veterans in due course and who are serving today also, of course, are people we must be honoring on this occasion. Give us just your sense of what it means to serve in this extraordinary way and a sense of the sacrifices that are entailed.
Well, first of all, I think it's important for us to remember that service in uniform to our country is a privilege. It is not a right. And I, as many others in America, had the privilege of being able to serve our country. What it means to me is that I've made an investment in America. And I think that all veterans feel that way. We've made an investment in this country. And we don't expect anything special other than just simply recognition that we have made an investment. And I think that's why Veterans Day is such an important time for Americans all over the country.
That's a marvelous way of approaching this, and I'm sure is one that many of your comrades in arms, both those serving today and those who previously served, feel as well. And an investment that many of the rest of us aren't making, sadly, or even failing to recognize that you all have made and are making. To the extent that there is now a disconnect between many of those of us in civilian life and those who are serving, as I say, have worn the uniform in the past, I wonder, General, whether you feel that this bespeaks a kind of larger societal problem. I kind of think of it as as almost a lost generation phenomenon. Of course, not in the sense that we lost a generation in war, as the British did in World War I, but we've lost the sort of cadre of people who are connected to the military, who have a connection in one form or another, whether they serve themselves or they have family members who served or they're in base communities or they work in defense industrial facilities. And the rest of us seem to have become increasingly really uninformed about what has been the nature of that sacrifice and investment. Am I off on that, do you think, or correct me if I'm wrong?
No, I think you're right. No, I think you're right, Frank. You know, first of all, you see as the number of military veterans decline in our Congress, for example, you see an awful lot of decisions that are certainly different than the decisions that were made two decades ago, and, you know, particularly under Ronald Reagan. And I think the declining number of veterans in our military is a problem. But within our society, you know, I mean, one of the great things about the draft was it brought every community in America, you know, into the military in one way or another, a son, a daughter, a brother, a sister, a father, whatever. So I think that there is a lack of understanding of our military today. That's why I think we were, you know, the Congress was so eager to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, because they have no concept of what military life is like. They have no concept of the sacrifices that are made. They have no concept of the living conditions and the rigors of serving in the military. And I think as a result of that, that's exactly what you see. Now, we've been at war for 11 years now, since the 9/11 events in 2001. But quite frankly, much of America has just sort of lost contact with what's going on in Afghanistan today. And they are not, I think, fully cognizant of the sacrifices that are being made by those young men and women. You know, many of them are willing to jump in and support a Wounded Warrior Project, but they really don't have a good understanding of just what these people are doing and the price that they're paying in service to this government who sent them to Afghanistan in the first place. So I think you're dead on. And as I said to you previously, Frank, I think we see a little bit of that going back to 1993 when the Clinton administration sent us into Mogadishu to capture a warlord there named Mohammed Fariadid. And then on the 3rd of October, we got in a big firefight. We killed and wounded about 1,100 of the enemy, and we lost 15 Americans. And the first instinct of the Clinton administration was to tuck their tail and get out as quickly as they could, where we clearly won a resounding victory, got what we went after, achieved our mission. But the administration was just not prepared for casualties. So I think that what you're talking about is something that is a significant problem for the nation today.
You've laid a very full table there for us, General, and I suspect we'll be snacking from it throughout the program. But just to stick with your last point, you, of course, were on the ground commanding at a time when, among other things, the episode that was immortalized by Black Hawk Down took place. And then, as you say, led to sort of cutting and running. This obviously was something of a trauma, I think it's fair to say, for the country and I imagine for those in uniform. But just staying with, for a moment, the condition of the military today, what is your sense of how our forces are coping with this seeming failure to understand what they're about and use them effectively in the nation's security interests?
Well, I think that, first of all, the young men and women that are deployed into Afghanistan today, they're just trying to stay alive. They're trying to accomplish their mission, and they don't have a great deal of time to focus on external things and what's happening in the country as a whole. That said, I think across the board, our military is in a state of great apprehension. I think that as they look at the not only the program cuts, but the sequestration cuts, and they look at $1 trillion+, they're going to come out of their budget, and the veterans in America are seeing real changes in veterans' benefits that's going to come as a result of Obamacare and a variety of other things that are programmed right now. I think there's a real apprehension in our military. I think morale is low. And I will say something, Frank, that I know will be controversial, but I also am greatly concerned about the leadership of our military today, starting with the Secretary of Defense and the decisions that are being made and the lack of, I think, lack of courage on the part of some of our active duty military people that have yet to stand up and put their stars on the table and say, you know, I will not supervise the demise of our military.
General Boykin, will you hold that thought? This is a critical point, and I want to drill down on it on the other side of a very short break. We're visiting with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin on Veterans Day, and we're getting from one of the men who knows best what is the status of our forces and their capabilities and their needs, the straight dope. And you're going to want to hear what he has to say about those leading those forces right after this. More with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Lieutenant General William Jerry Boykin, retired, the author of three extraordinary books, one a memoir, Never Surrender, and two works of fiction, though they are I must say, chillingly similar to reality, Danger Close and Kiloton Threat. General Boykin is currently the executive vice president with the Family Research Council, and we're delighted to have a full hour to visit with him. General Boykin, before the break, we were speaking about your concerns about the both civilian and military leadership of the armed forces of the United States. I wonder what your reading is on not only their views on sequestration and the hollowing out of the military that is certain to flow from that, but some of the other issues that we talk about with you whenever we get a chance, including the Islamists. But let's stick with the sequestration bit for a moment, because I think that's very topical, needless to say, as the Congress is beginning to wrestle with what to do about this looming $500 billion in further across-the-board cuts to the United States Armed Forces. You were saying the military should be putting their stars on the line in opposition to this. Why aren't they?
you know, they have to answer that individually. You know, Harold K. Johnson was the 24th chief of staff of the Army, and in his memoirs, he said something very interesting, and that was that he had repeatedly requested that Lyndon Johnson activate the Guard and Reserve, and that was to draw all of America into the conflict in Vietnam. And he had his driver take him to the White House one day. He got out of the car to go in and tell Johnson that if Johnson did not activate the Guard and Reserve, he would resign and protest. He got out, he thought about it for a moment, got back in his car and went back to the Pentagon and didn't do it. But he said in his memoirs that was the greatest regret that he ever had because he knew it was the right thing to do and he didn't do it. And I think today is a time for some of our senior officers to simply say, I will not preside over the demise of our military. And today we need some general officers with the courage to go in and resign if they are unsuccessful in convincing the administration and the Congress that we cannot have a military that is so weak that it can't defend this nation. And that's what we're going to have with the cuts in the Navy, bringing us down to World War One levels in our Navy, the cuts in our Army and Marine Corps that will just bring us to a point where we don't have sufficient forces to cover all of our national security requirements, cuts in our Air Force and in our missile forces and so forth that can't protect the nation. I think we need some leaders that are willing to go in and say, either listen to what I'm saying and start negotiating to turn this around, or I will resign and protest. But we've had nothing like that happen so far.
Yeah. General Jerry Boykin, I'm sure you've seen this up close, and maybe General Johnson's anecdote is an example of it. The rationale that is often given is, well, I could step down, but if I do, will somebody less capable or without my, you know, commitment to the country or at least my skill set and integrity come in and do the bidding of these other folks, and it won't make any difference. Better that I stay on and try to do what I can to make things come out rather better. That rationale, of course, often has no bearing on actually making any improvements, and it's not a certain thing that these resignations would affect course corrections. But in your experience, and what counsel you might give on this Veterans Day to those who are in these senior leadership positions, how would you reckon with that rationalization?
Well, I've heard that rationalization frequently, and I first of all, there is probably some merit to that notion. But that said, at the end of the day, we all have to do what we believe is right, and I think that if we ponder as senior officers in the military, if we ponder and consider the second and third order effects and the long-term impact of what's happening to our military, the question then becomes, do I have a moral obligation to raise the awareness of the American public? The American public is not aware of this. The American public doesn't understand it, but the people that are serving, that bear the burden of the responsibility for our military, are the people that do understand it, and they have, I think they have an obligation to, if they can't make a difference, then I think they have an obligation to highlight the dangers of moving forward with these program cuts, with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, with the other variety of policies that are impacting the military. I think they have a moral obligation to raise the awareness of that, and they do that by simply, if you want to call it such, sacrificing themselves. But I think there's a moral imperative to do that and bring it to the attention of the Americans.
Yeah. General Boykin, I couldn't agree more with you. I think this is a clarion call, and I pray that it'll be heeded. Let me ask you to just drill down for a moment on something you've touched on now several times. You said at the very beginning that it is a privilege, not a right, to serve in the United States Armed Forces. And you've mentioned twice now, I think, the so-called don't ask, don't tell policy that was revoked. It actually was, as you know, the law of the land, not simply an executive branch policy, but the law of the land that avowed homosexuals could not serve in the military. Are you seeing, as many have feared, an impact on the morale of the troops and perhaps on their fighting trim, that those of us who have so little appreciation of the intimate conditions in which many, particularly on the front lines, must serve, are now being subjected to as part of, a larger, well, let's be clear, activist homosexual agenda for the country?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the full impact of this will take a decade. It's gradual, it's subtle, but listen, I still talk to a lot of special operations people, and I will just simply tell you that they are very unhappy about it, and they do believe that it has an impact on the effectiveness as well as the morale. Now, listen, Frank, this is not about stopping homosexuals from serving in the military. That's what people don't understand. They served in the military under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I don't think any of us really care what people do behind closed doors. The whole point of Don't Ask, Don't Tell was that you cannot openly be homosexual and serve in the military. Now, some would say, well, you're denying them their rights. Again, I'm going to say serving in the military is a privilege. It is not a constitutional right. The military is always discriminated. But this is what I would ask. At a time when our military has been at war, at that time had been at war for 10 years, at a time when families are under such great stress from the repeated extensive deployments into combat zones, when we're sending warriors home with PTSD and with traumatic brain injury and other debilitating types of wounds, why would you put more stress on the military other than to support the radical agenda of the homosexual community? I don't care what they do. I don't care what they do in their private time and the privacy of their bedroom. But what I do care about is our military. And why would you do a social experiment? What the Congress needs to be focused on is making the decisions that will enhance the readiness of the military, period. And I cannot find any reasonable thought that shows how allowing homosexuals to serve openly in the military is enhancing the readiness of the military.
Mm-hmm. And the repercussions of this, as you say, General, may not be obvious for some time, and yet will be no less insidious. We have to take another short pause. We will be right back with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. And when we get back, I want to visit with you about another aspect of command decisions that is being made now with profound implications for our freedom of speech in this country in deference to the Islamists. That and much, much more with Lieutenant General William Jerry Boykin. Straight ahead.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'm fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Adopt Us Kids and the Ad Council.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In Washington, when the official line seems improbable, people say it doesn't pass the smell test. Well, there's a lot that stinks at the moment about the Benghazi Gate affair, including now the circumstances involving the forced resignation of a man in the middle of it, President Obama's CIA director and former four-star Army General David Petraeus. Within hours of the jihadist attack in Libya on September 11th that killed four Americans, the administration started dissembling and lying about what happened. General Petraeus could surely shed light on the matter. But because of an affair the FBI knew about for months, but ostensibly didn't mention to the White House until the night of the election, he's out, and so won't testify at Benghazi hearings this week. This stinks, and the Congress needs to find out why. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm a champion, realize checks mechanism.
Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for Rad. This is not your normal PSA. Don't be stupid. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to go out and have a good time, it's fine. But designate a driver to drive home. Let's stop the madness. Don't drink and drive.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
We're back, joined once again by one of people I admire most, both among the veterans community and in the general population, and that is Lieutenant General William Jerry Boykin, United States Army retired, a former senior commander of special forces and other units in the United States Army, a man who served in a variety of other capacities. We'll come to some of those in a bit, including Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. He is currently with the esteemed Family Research Council, where he is the executive vice president. And General Boykin, we're talking about senior leadership, and I realize that this is a sensitive subject because you have been one, and you know, I'm sure, personally, many of those who are currently at the senior echelons of the United States military, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey. But you're also a man who has thought deeply about and spoken and written and engaged directly on one of the great challenges of our time, which is the threat posed by what the Islamists call Sharia and the effort to impose it upon us, one element of which, of course, is the effort to compel us not to say anything they find offensive, no matter how true it is about them, their agenda, and the progress they're making in imposing it upon us. Speak to me, if you will, speak to our audience, more to the point, if you will, about what we should make of General Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, our senior military officer in the United States Armed Forces, engaging personally in ways that seem to be designed to suppress freedom of speech on the part of this pastor down in Florida, a filmmaker, and others.
Yeah, Frank, I tell you, I was greatly disappointed. First of all, I know Marty Dempsey, and the truth is he was a good division commander. But the fact that after this event in Benghazi, that he picked up the phone and called some, I think, knucklehead pastor of a church of less than 100 people down in Florida, the same guy that had wanted to publicly burn Korans previously. I think this guy's a knucklehead. I think this guy has not worth the time of anybody, to be very honest with you. Not that I care whether he burns Korans or not, because I don't, but I think that this guy's gotten far too much attention. And the chairman of the Joint Chiefs calls him and asks him not to endorse this video, that this obscure video that nobody's ever seen anyhow by this guy out in California. Well, first of all, the guy in California had a First Amendment right to produce that thing. My question is, how many times has Dempsey called Hamid Karzai and said, if one more of your soldiers kills another one of ours, you're going to be the next on the list? We are going to take severe action the next time one of your soldiers. How many times has he called him? He hasn't. You know, Frank, I could not speak in February of this year at West Point. The Army leadership determined that because the Council of American Islamic Relations and three atheist groups protested my speaking at West Point, not about Islam and not even really about Christianity, but about faith in general, the importance of faith to leaders. They protested, and the Army leadership determined that I was not suitable to speak there. And then you've got Marty Dempsey calling this knucklehead pastor. And then on top of all of that, the day after Nadal Hassan killed 13 people at Fort Hood on the 5th of November 2009, the very next week, actually, we had, as you know, Louis Saffi, a known Muslim Brotherhood operative, teaching all of the deploying soldiers there about Islam and Islamic culture and so forth. Now, they could speak at Fort Hood, but I couldn't speak at West Point. And Marty Dempsey's calling some pastor, telling him not to endorse a video. What has happened to our military? What has happened to our nation? What has happened to our leadership? We're upside down.
Yeah. General Boykin, thank you for making this very vivid contrast. And there's one other example that I want to put into the mix and just get your thoughts on it. You have, of course, participated as co-leader with your colleague, Lieutenant General Ed Soyster, United States Army retired former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, in what we call the Team B2 group, publishing, I think, most important work, Sharia, the Threat to America. And in it, we laid bare a number of these issues in terms of the Islamists' penetration of and establishment, really, of these organizations like the Council on American Islamic Relations, Louis Saffi's Islamic Society of North America, and others. But we also talk about this problem of Sharia blasphemy. And I just want your thoughts on what you took away and what everybody in the armed forces had to take away from General Dempsey holding a press conference recently in which he explicitly attacked, defamed, and effectively destroyed the career of Lieutenant Colonel Matt Dooley, a distinguished rising military officer who had been teaching about this issue of Sharia and Islam and the threat that those who are seeking, in the name of Islam, to impose Sharia on the rest of us represent.
Well, I think it's important to recognize that Lieutenant Colonel Dooley, who was teaching at the Armed Forces Staff College, was teaching an approved curriculum. And what he was teaching was coming directly out of the Quran and the Hadith. There were no judgments there. It was simply teaching what the Quran and the Hadith teach. So I think the fact that Dempsey stood up and castigated this guy, ruined his career, is another indication of just how on the ropes our leadership is in this country, not just in the military, but at all levels. Look at John McCain's reaction to a simple letter by five of our members of Congress asking that someone look into how Hillary Clinton's assistant, Huma Abedin, who is associated with the Muslim Brotherhood through her father, her mother, her brother, and through her previous employment, they simply asked to look into how she got a security clearance, the highest level of security clearance. And look what we've got from a Republican, from John McCain. We get a reaction that they are bigots, that they should be censored, that they have done something wrong. Thank God for those five people, that they care enough about this nation to ask that kind of question. It was a simple question. It was a question that should have been asked. I could never get a security clearance if I had those kinds of associations. But it's bad at all levels, Frank. The leadership in this nation is ignoring the realities of the threat.
Mm-hmm. And they have, as our colleague Stephen Coughlin has pointed out, and as you know so well, General Jerry Boykin, a professional responsibility to know that threat and to respond to it accordingly. And I just say on the matter that you've just pointed out, of course, those five members of Congress, led by Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who, as a result of John McCain's attack and that of John Boehner and that of, many others, including members of the press, very narrowly won re-election this last time around. Thank God she did. But these are folks who, again, like Matt Dooley, have been made an object lesson for everyone else, serving notice on both the elite media and on members of Congress and on academics and on others in the general population. You don't want to raise even the most obvious of questions, notably, not just, how did a person get a security clearance? And by the way, there were a number of other people that were mentioned in these letters to the five inspectors general, as you know, General Boykin. But what influence are they having on policy? And that's an issue we're going to come back to right after a very short break with more of this Veterans Day special edition with former Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, one of our country's great veterans and most inspiring leaders now in private life, right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show.
Up in the morning and out to school.
Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here just like they did over there.
So now, I'm never alone.
I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined once again for our final segment of this special Veterans Day edition of Secure Freedom Radio by one of our most admired comrades veterans, Lieutenant General William Jerry Boykin, United States Army, retired. General, I mentioned in introducing you previously that among your many, many distinctions, you served as the number two official inside the Defense Department responsible for intelligence, which is a huge portfolio, the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. You have also served, I know, over the years with a man who has just resigned from the position of director of the Central Intelligence Agency, General David Petraeus, United States Army, retired. He did so for reasons having to do with an extramarital affair. But one of the things that I would be very keen to get your thoughts on are how we're likely to look back on his contribution, both in the field as a military officer, but also in terms of advancing this so-called counterinsurgency strategy that the Army has been applying first in Iraq and now most recently in Afghanistan, and how it's worked out.
Well, I'll tell you, Frank, I think, and I may be different than a lot of people, but I think that we started down the right track. We started doing some very good things, and that was strengthening the forces, the military and police in Afghanistan, as well as Iraq, and building capabilities within them. But then we transitioned into the nation-building aspect of this, and I think that that's a misuse of the military. I think that's, first of all, it's a State Department responsibility. if we're going to get into that. But I think we've spent an awful lot of money in what we call nation building, and we've gotten off track on that. So I'm very concerned. You know, the military is good at training others. It's good at fighting the enemy. It's good at bringing stability. But nation building, I think, is a different thing, and that's where you've got to bring in other entities and other resources, and that really becomes, in my view, an international responsibility, not just an American military responsibility.
But let's talk a little bit more about how specifically the strategy that General Petraeus advanced while he was out at Leavenworth of hearts and minds winning. I guess it's part of the nation building, to be sure, but it seems as though it had been raised to such a prominent role, General Boykin, that it dramatically affected everything from our actual conduct of combat operations and the rules of engagement that governed them to our appreciation of the nature of the enemy in places like Afghanistan and the Muslim Brotherhood, for example, elsewhere. Am I right about that?
Yeah, absolutely, Frank. It resulted in some very restrictive rules of engagement. It resulted in some bottlenecks in terms of the chain of command. I just sat down with a guy named Billy Vaughn, who is the father of a SEAL that was killed last August in that big Chinook crash there in Afghanistan. And he was at a memorial service, and they were actually telling him that they knew where the RPGs were, that they had seen the RPGs firing from specific locations. They had Apache helicopters that could have taken them out. And one of the parents there asked the question, why didn't we take them out before we brought that Chinook in? And he got a response from a three-star admiral. Well, you're not there to kill them. We're there to win the hearts and minds. And that has been repeated a number of times. In fact, election eve, I was doing Glenn Beck's program with Louis Gohmert, the First District of Texas, and Louis told that story about the response that we're there to win the hearts and minds. That we are so far off track with regards to that. Now, yes, there is a case to be made for doing that, but not at the expense of the lives of our soldiers and being unwilling to engage the enemy. When the enemy engages us, there are always collateral damage. There's always somebody's going to get killed that is an unarmed combatant. It's one of the casualties of war, but we've gone overboard on that, and thereby we put our own service members at risk because of the restrictive rules of engagement based on that concept.
Yeah. You've studied this extensively, General Jerry Boykin, and written about it in your various capacities and works, including, of course, Sharia, the Threat to America. And the thing that I find perhaps most troubling is not just that we're putting our kids at grave risk in the hope of not giving offense to, those who we seek to win over. And I'm not simply speaking about not killing them accidentally. That's obviously undesirable. But this effort to convey to them that we regard them as somehow, frankly, superior, is feeding into a doctrinal response, an almost genetic response that those who adhere to a Sharia specifically have, which is to say when they see that kind of evidence of our submissiveness, they must redouble the effort to make us, as the Quran says, feel subdued. And I just wonder, again, from a military man's perspective, that would seem to me to be, in your mind, counterproductive in the extreme, would it not?
Well, I think it absolutely does, and you're right. I mean, I think you make a very good point, Frank. They see that as a sign of weakness. They see us as being a weak enemy. And the fact that we're unwilling to go in and use our full resources and use it aggressively against them just encourages them. It helps them with their recruiting, and it gives them a boldness that they would not otherwise have.
Yeah, it's likely to result in a lot more of us getting killed, not just on the battlefield, but elsewhere as well. General Boykin, in closing, we have, of course, now got a vacancy at the CIA. You've spent a lifetime working with intelligence and in some capacities actually being part of that community. One of the names that is being bruited about as the successor for David Petraeus is the current Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, a gentleman by the name of Mike Vickers, also a special operator in a previous incarnation, been in the intelligence business and in the Defense Department's senior leadership for some time. What would you say is the advisability of entrusting this position, the Central Intelligence Director, to Mike Vickers?
Yeah, you know, he was Mike Vickers was, I think, highlighted in the movie and the book Charlie Wilson's War, and probably did some good things. I think it was overplayed a bit, but if you go on his current reputation, and I don't know him well, but if you go on his current reputation, I would say there are probably much better choices to lead the CIA at this time than Michael Vickers.
Yeah, I've been told that there are some serious problems with his conduct, and they may come to light, but I just wanted to give you an opportunity to address them. And thoughts on the departure of David Petraeus, if you have any?
I'm very sad. I've known David a long time. I'm very sad. But look, let me give him credit for this. He had a moral failure. He had an integrity failure. And I, for one, I make no excuses for that. I have no time for that. He's had a distinguished career. But to his credit, he stood up, looked in the cameras and said, I did it, and I am resigning as a result of it. You know, he could have been like Bill Clinton. He could have said, okay, so what? That's my private life. What's that got to do with my job here? But I think he showed character in standing up, admitting it, and resigning as a result of it. So I give him credit for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he probably had a special responsibility to do so, having throughout his career, as you know, made such an important point of integrity on those he was leading and his other comrades, specifically, I think, to the effect of it's what you do when nobody's watching that it's bespeaks whether you have integrity or not. So I agree with you. He seems to have been a man of considerable capability, and I think we will probably miss him in that job. And we don't know the full extent of his role in Benghazi Gate. That is presumably going to be coming to light later this week, but we'll be watching closely all of this, and I look forward to visiting with you again in the future on it, sir. Thank you, General Jerry Boykin, for your extraordinary service to our country, past, present, and future, and I wish you the very best for this Veterans Day, and you've certainly made it better for all of us by sharing it with us. Thank you, folks, for listening. We will talk with all of you again tomorrow. Until then, I hope you've had a good holiday, and God bless you.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.